A lot of people think that innovation is just spontaneous, right? It's best achieved in kind of unconstrained, creative, nourishing, and accommodating environments, right? But my experience would suggest otherwise. In large part, I think the ability to consistently innovate depends on a discipline's mastery of the basics. So only when you fully understand kind of the basic rules and assumptions that kind of back them up in the area that you're working in, can you hope to bend, break, or reinvent them to your benefit.
This is Facility Rockstars, the podcast that celebrates the unsung heroes of our daily lives, facility professionals. I'm your host, Jay Culbert. Join me as we honor these great leaders, sharing stories, insights, and expertise that empower us all to learn and grow together. Facility Rockstars is sponsored by Colutus, operating the way you operate in order to make your life easier.
Welcome back to Facility Rockstars. I'm your host, Jay Culbert. And today, Matt and Sal rejoin us to delve even deeper into their incredible journeys, both as Navy SEALs and successful business owners. Get ready for more powerful insights, inspiring stories, and lessons learned along the way. And let's not forget the laughs we had. So let's dive right back in.
So Matt, stack your most critical teams, right? Now, what do you mean by that? Walk us through that, please, as a second concept.
Yeah, so when we're talking about stack your most critical teams, I usually start off polling the audience and asking them if anyone knew what the kill ratio was, which is enemies killed for each friendly SEAL killed in action for the SEALs in Vietnam, right? And we always get 50, 100, you know, different numbers. The number is actually 200 to 1, right? Which is really an incredible statistic.
Staggering.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Unfortunately, 46 SEALs died in Vietnam. But if you crunch the numbers, if you do the math, that means that over 9,000 enemies killed in action, which, again, staggering, right? That kind of combat lethality is amazing. If you think about this, it of course does not mean that if you put one SEAL in a gymnasium with a bunch of enemy combatants that SEAL is going to come out unscathed with a pile of bodies, you know, straight out of 300, the Xerxes body. Well, you know, I don't know if anyone's seen that movie. That's not going to be the outcome, right? It's more complex than that. It's more nuanced than that, right? The only way that kind of performance is achieved is through the compounding effect of teams, right? Specifically, teams that have an abundance of high performers can vastly outperform teams of mixed performers, provided the right structure, conditions, and incentives, some of which we've talked about prior to this, right? So put another way, the performance of a team of high performers, all high performers, can be greater, potentially much greater than the sum of its parts, right? So then we talk about kind of how do you, you know, what does this insight mean for business owners outside of the SEAL teams or outside of sport teams? How can we leverage this insight when we're assembling teams in the real world, especially when you don't have a team of all high performers like we do in the SEAL teams, right? Or at least a large amount of high performers. But what it means is that we need to be deliberate about allocating talent and resist the urge to simply spread it out among all of our teams, right? And that's in consulting and throughout my time in the private sector. That's what I notice is kind of the prevailing wisdom, right? I'm going to take my highest performing guys, girls, and I'm going to allocate them evenly, and I'm going to hope that they bring everyone up with them, right? I'm going to hope that they nurture and mentor and, you know, bring up all these, you know, B, C, D performers. And that's the best way that I can, you know, best bang for my buck that I can get. And I challenge people to kind of rethink that, right? They're hoping, you know, occasionally it works, but more often than not, you get really haphazard results and a much higher likelihood of those high performers heading for the door, right? So alternatively, what people should think about doing is prioritize, right? So look at your most your highest priority tasks and missions, and you know, the things that you can't fail on, and put together a team of high performers to go and crush it, right? So if you don't do it that way, you risk underutilizing your talent, increasing turnover, and really putting at risk some of those more important missions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. And I, in my experience, I see that happens at times, but not often enough throughout my entire career. So how would you, what advice would either you, Sal, or you, Matt, give for a team that isn't currently doing this, and how could they be audacious and start doing it, right? Mm-hmm. What's the step they could take in that direction?
Yeah, I can go. I can keep talking, no problem. for this, I mean, a lot of managing teams successfully is getting to know each individual and their strengths and weaknesses, like where are they a top performer, and making sure you're utilizing them as such. So a good place to start is to get to know your people and to understand where they excel, and that will allow you to utilize them in the best way possible. So that's a great place to start. Get to know your people, get to know what they're good at, get to know what they're not great at. On the flip side of that, which I've already said, prioritize your what you need to get done in your business, right? Every business should have yearly strategic priorities that they're working towards, right? At least yearly, and you should probably be looking at further out, 3 to 5 years as well. Those yearly strategic priorities should fit in with that greater strategic plan that you've developed. Sure. But identifying those 3 to 5 priorities and making sure that that's where you're spending, 80% of your time and your team's energy, and you're assigning some real superstars to lead up and to manage and to run those priorities.
Great insights. Thank you, Matt.
Something worth thinking about, when you're spreading out that talent like that. So let's just say there's some number, you have 4 sales teams, right? Each sales team has 5 people. You have in your company 4 super high performing salespeople, right? If you're spreading them out, are you essentially asking them to take on more responsibility, to take them kind of off their mission focus, which is getting sales, and try to coach these guys up, these lower performers up? Are you asking them to take on that responsibility? Because if you are, you're taking their focus away from generating revenue and then to kind of more of a training, kind of a more of a coaching, kind of trying to, hey, bring these guys up. Because if you are spreading out your talent, why are you doing it? Are you hoping it's just going to rub off magically, that people are going to see these high performers as part of their team and think, oh, now I'm a high? No, you have to train those people up. And if you're asking your high performers to do that, you're going to lose their effectiveness out in the field.
This is a really, really good point, Sal, that you thank you for bringing that up, because it ties in with, this has come up on the show and certainly in our lives and our careers, but you take an individual contributor, at least this is what I'm translating to a degree, and you try to make them you'll be a great team leader. Well, maybe they wouldn't be a great team leader, right? Yeah. That's not what they excel at. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Great distinction, and certainly lands.
But it all circles back to what Matt was saying, which is know your people, right? And it is kind of lazy just to take your, hey, these are our top 4 performers. Let's spread them throughout our top, our 4 sales teams. Mm-hmm. And hey, it's magically going to improve, the sales team performance. The performance of the teams is going to improve by doing that. And it's just probably not the case. It's probably going to suffer, because now those top performers aren't performing. They're relegated to kind of this coaching management role that they might not be best suited for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good way, to kind of contextualize this. That we all know about kind of the Pareto distribution, right? And I think that pretty much goes through every sales organization. You have, 80% of the leads are developed, or 80% of the deals closed by 20% of the sales individuals, right? So you got you got your superstars. Well, if you pair your superstar who is getting, 10x more deals done than anyone else in the firm, right? But you pair him with an SDR and a admin individual that aren't top performers, right? And he's having to walk them along to educate them. His productivity goes from 10x down to 3x. That drops your company's productivity. It has a outsized impact, right? So your best move would be to have a superstar team where he can focus just on his job, on selling 10x, maybe 15x when you put him with the best best support personnel you can to execute his deals, you know, get the paperwork done, find leads, and just let him eat, right? So
oh, you just reminded me, Matt, we have to touch on paperwork. But you guys love it. I know you do. Now, this is a really, really good discussion. I think you just answered a question that I was going to ask. So if you stack all of your highest performing, say, salespeople, like we're saying now, you answered it, and, you know, give them the right support, right? They're not great at paperwork. They're great at closing deals or whatever they're great at, but they're not great at all these other things. So you need that support team. That was going to be my question for you. So what's the solve? And
Well, sales superstars, individual contributors are sometimes not the best people to talk about with the, putting all of them together. The right structure, the right conditions, the right incentives are critical. If you have three individual contributors who are all chasing after their own quotas, that is a recipe, a structure for disaster, right? So you can have all three of them and be like, oh, I have this key account that I want them to go after. The worst idea possible is probably to put three of your sales superstars on a single account. So I want to make sure to caveat this by the right incentive structure, the right conditions are set for those kind of high performing teams.
Great stuff. I will keep us moving because we have so much to cover, guys. So the third topic is drive innovation by mastering the basics, right?
Yes.
And I'll just, again, Matt, I think you're going to take the lead on this. Go right ahead. What do you mean by this? What should the audience learn? What can you share?
Yeah. And this, I won't say that this is my original, original thought. This is how we structure training. And this is how we kind of, this is a crawl, walk, run philosophy that we go with in the SEAL teams, not just in the SEAL teams, but everywhere else. We really anchor to this in the SEAL teams though, right? So the SEAL teams were world renowned for innovation at both the operational and tactical levels. We try to constantly evolve our strategies and tactics, right? And it's embedded in our SEAL code that Navy SEALs excel as warriors through discipline and innovation, not through superior numbers and conventional thinking, right? So innovation is really a key component of our success, at least I believe. A lot of people think that innovation is just spontaneous, right? It's best achieved in kind of unconstrained, creative, nourishing, and accommodating environments, right? But my experience would suggest otherwise. In large part, I think the ability to consistently innovate depends on a disciplined mastery of the basics. So only when you fully understand kind of the basic rules and assumptions that kind of back them up in the area that you're working in, can you hope to bend, break, or reinvent them to your benefit, right? I think it was, Isaac Newton who said, if I have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulder of giants, right? This is to say that a deep understanding of foundational theories that were kind of set before him and that preceded him enabled the development of the reflective telescope and theory of light and color and universal gravitation, all that stuff that he came up with, right? Calculus. So one of the things that SEALs excel at specifically is called close quarter combat, or CQC for short. And in layman's terms, that's the tactics that are employed to clear buildings and towns with precision while minimizing risk to friendlies and civilians, right? So it's half art, it's half science, and requires practice and innovation to be successful. Complex operations often involve multiple maneuver elements of assaulters, air assets, artillery, dogs, explosives, drones. All of these are like choreographed at night to surprise and overwhelm the enemy, right? However, the only way that operations like those are possible is because of the way we train as teams, right? So every 2 years, SEAL platoons go through a workup for deployment, and then we deploy for 6 months. And they'll go through like a basic CQC training block. And every single time, that training starts the same way at the most basic level, right? And then progressively builds from there. So you'll be daytime at a stationary range, like we were shooting Jay, at a stationary target, right? And then you'll move on to maybe shooting and moving, and then maybe shooting and moving as a team, shooting, moving, and communicating with radios, then single room entries, multi-flow, et cetera. So it's crawl, walk, run throughout the entire training cycle, right? And then over the course of six months, the team kind of masters and builds on the basics that really unlock the ability to orchestrate complex profiles like the one we kind of talked about. So we can really apply those same principles in business, I think, and I can let Sal chime in here, of course, as well. But ensure that your teams have mastered the basics, right? So in strategy consulting, it means communicating complex ideas in simple terms, running effective meetings and workshops, and doing a good job like structuring problem solving, right? And when those basics all become second nature, it kind of liberates the team to focus on developing breakthroughs and innovative concepts, right?
Perfect. I have a question, Matt. Great stuff. So we talked about a lost night vision piece of equipment or a lost firearm, and like, wow, like what does this do? What's the consequence there? What happens when something like that happens in the SEALs world?
Yeah, I mean, a popular joke, especially, among the guys, it's always, you stop and it's at night and somebody says, hey, has anyone seen my nods? Nods is night vision. These things are like 60K a pop, right? And they're highly inventoried and they're serialized. If you lose them, there's hell to pay. What does it mean? I mean, if you lose a gun or a set of nods, it's pretty bad. Like, there's a lot of paperwork, and for the rest of that night and probably the next morning, you're going to be online searching every single place that it could have fallen off, whether that's on dry land or in the surf zone or whatever. You're going to be sifting through the sand of the Pacific trying to find that firearm or that sighted night vision goggles, right? And then
you mean not just that person, but the team. Yes.
Whole team. Whole team.
So your team's loving you at that point is what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's, you get a certain amount of leeway because I think we've all, you operate long enough and there's, everyone's been in a scenario like that. It's definitely, you're going to catch some shit from everybody.
The surf zone is a violent place.
Yeah.
Many pieces of equipment exist between many pieces of equipment exist between the shoreline and the next 50 yards out to sea.
And that's like a gunner nods. You lose a radio, encrypted radio, and it's even worse. That's like next level type stuff because it has even larger implications. So
just to chime in, I mean, Matt covers this stuff so well. To kind of bring it back to the civilian world, the business world, and, mastering the basics. We talked about, why it's important for the SEAL teams, and we could talk a little bit about, beyond what Matt said, why it's important in the business world. And, one thing I will say is that, you'll find like in the most stressful scenarios or the most like chaotic scenarios, whether it's combat or the business world, like a lot of times people, when they clam up, like they revert to the fundamentals, right? They go back to the most basic things they know, right? Like Matt was saying, you're kind of that prime animal instinct. You go back to your foundation. And so that's why I think it's so, one of the reasons why it's so important to master those foundations, because if you're going back to that level and that level isn't solid as a rock, the whole thing could collapse, right? Mm-hmm. You'll hear about it a lot too. You're like, oh man, that company's like growing really fast. Are they ready to grow? you know, have they mastered the basics? Yeah. Like we came across that with Battlegrounds, like, oh man, oh, look at this opportunity to kind of, you know, progress to open a second and third location. Are we ready for that? Like, are we ready for that? Do we have a strong enough foundation? You'll say that. Do we have a strong enough foundation to grow? And so, you know, beyond innovation, I think just growth, it's important. You can't grow if you don't have a strong fundamental. You'll hear a lot about it too with like companies that are growing and are scaling and they're getting big, but then you'll talk to their like accounting department and they're like, oh my God, no, we don't have, you know, the resources in place to handle this growth. And so they're struggling with that. And then that affects morale. And then people are pissy and people don't like working there anymore. And it starts to creep up. It's like a cancer. It creeps up through the entire company. So if you're not mastering the fundamentals in kind of not just mastering fundamentals, but putting kind of foundational pieces in place before you grow or scale, and the same thing, grow and scale, but before you grow or before you, you know, decide to implement a new technology or product or something like that, you know, you might survive, but it's going to be a lot harder than if you were to have spent the time kind of shoring up that foundational level. And so I think that's where it comes down to mastering risk. The basics.
It increases your risk not having processes and kind of a plan for growth. But of course, we also talked about having the audacity to just do it. Don't get caught up in the planning too much.
Is that the art and science piece coming together?
Well,
it is. Well, and it goes into the art and the science and the tactical patience and being able to put aside your emotional, the way you feel, and work purely off of logic, reason, and data.
And a lot of what we're talking about or a lot of what I've been talking about is kind of like de-stressing things, right? So when I said surround yourself with people you can trust, so you don't have to worry about them. So they're not in the back of your mind, you know, oh, hey, are they making the right decision for the company? Are they making the right decision for the team? You never want to have to occupy space in your brain worrying about things like that. Same thing with the fundamentals and your foundation, like with the business. Oh my God. Like, oh, does our accounting team have the right software in place? Oh, do we have enough people to manage this? Oh, do we have enough, you know, processes in place? Oh, it's like just causes stress and takes away from, you know, whatever mission you're trying to complete at the time. You want to de-stress as much as you can. And you do that by mastering the fundamentals, you know, it kind of doing all the things we've said, so you can focus on the mission. I guess all of this really kind of boils down to allowing you, right, the business owner or the person in charge, to kind of focus on driving more revenue, growing the company, doing things like that by not having to worry about all these little things, right? Because that's what eats people alive. It's like, I don't want to have to worry about this basic stuff. And you'll talk to business owners too, and they get so frustrated. A lot of times their frustration stems from these fundamental issues that they're having, right? Like these base level problems that just keep popping up. You'll hear them like, oh my God, you'll hear this. I can't believe I have to effing deal with this. Like, I can't believe I have to deal with this. You wouldn't, as a business owner, have to deal with that if you had taken the time, right, to master those fundamentals. They would be taken care of. They would take care of themselves.
Great way to land it, Sal. Like, that's spot on. It's funny. I've seen with acquisitions of smaller companies, when the owner does a lot of different roles, they're just ecstatic that they've been, you know, bought by a larger company because all those support mechanisms are in place and they don't have to do that anymore, right? The three-step system, Matt, that you walked us through was excellent. And, you know, it sounds like it's a great time for us to move to, I want to give you guys a chance to talk about your business, Bluebean. So what does all of this mean? And how it relates to Bluebean and how Bluebean relates to business?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think this is a great segue, and it sounds like Sal was intentional in the examples that he used, trying to tee this up as a segue. But
are you suggesting he was subtle?
Very subtle, not so subtle. But
Black Ops.
It's a good segue. Because Sal and I are both, you know, we both work for this company, Bluebeam, and what we really do is enable companies to put in those processes that scale and grow along with them, and that enable you to take a lot of the manual processing, a lot of that stress out of specifically business payments, right? So Bluebeam, what it is, we are a we're a business payment automation platform, and we simplify and automate purchasing, payment, and expense management tasks, covering pretty much all of employee-initiated spending. So that's going to be your corporate cards, on-the-go purchases, preferred vendors, tail spend, stuff like that, right? The way we do that, so before purchases, we control spending before it happens by setting individual and team spending limits. Also defining kind of your preferred vendors and utilizing AI-driven policy enforcement, actually. And that ensures all your transactions align with whatever your company policies are. During transactions, payments are streamlined using a virtual card only, one-time virtual card, and that could be a debit card or a credit card. And we process this automatically through our browser extension and mobile application, right? And that largely takes away the need for invoices, purchase orders, stuff like that. Receipts are captured at the time of purchase via screen capture or picture with the mobile app. So it removes a lot of the manual processing there. And then after the purchase, we work seamlessly with accounting systems, and we have some powerful accounting automation functions like GL, general ledger, and cost mapping, cost splitting, and assigning employees to cost objects. And that really ensures accurate, real-time, up-to-date financial data in your accounting system. So this is one of the basic functions of businesses. It has been for some time now. We've just been this legacy process of requisition orders, purchase orders, invoices, receipts, reconciling them at the end of the month, putting them into your accounting system. That process has been around. Sal, didn't you look this up and there was like 3,000 years ago on a stone tablet was like the first purchase order? So,
yeah, an invoice in like Sumer in the
love it.
But yeah, I think it's one of like the oldest recorded business transactions, something like 5,000 years old.
Yeah, it's crazy that, you know, the process might have been fine-tuned, but essentially we've been doing things the same way. And just, you know, most of the tools these days are just to digitize that process, go from paper to, you know, to the computer, right? Really what Bluebeam does is rethinks that, automates 80% plus of it. Again, it puts a process and a solution in place that scales up with your business.
Great run through. What's the target business that would benefit the most, if there is one? Because a lot of our audience members, thankfully, are in either commercial real estate, manufacturing, facility leaders, business leaders. Is there any type of business that would specifically be best suited for this?
Yeah, definitely. And it's the answer is somewhat easy. It's anybody with a large amount of employee initiated purchases, right? So if you have guys out in the field, property management, you know, HVAC repair, stuff like that, you got a lot of guys out in the field that need to make purchases at Home Depot or at Lowe's or you know, business development, taking people out to dinner, paying for gas, any employee initiated purchase, yeah, travel. That is what we can help out with, and those are the type of expenses that usually take up a exorbitant amount of time in these companies. That's essentially our target demographic.
Perfect. Anything else people should know before, because at the end here, guys, I'll give everyone, you an opportunity to share your contact information or how people can reach out and learn more on their own. But is there any other aspect of Bluebeam you'd want to share here on the show?
No, I mean, I think that's a good overview. We are super enthusiastic about it. If there's anything, you know, having been in the SEAL teams, having been in the corporate world, I haven't really estimated how much time I spent collecting receipts. Like I had for a while, my wallet had like a special slot to put all those receipts. Then I had like a photo album on my phone, you know, and then every single week, month when I was on deployment, you're reconciling your receipts and submitting expense reports. And I'm trying to make all of my guys do it too. It's like pulling teeth to have these guys do that, right? So, you know, that it was a little bit easier. Government travel claims are a nightmare. A little bit easier in the civilian world, but still, as a consultant, was doing, you know, was traveling a lot and doing a lot of I don't know how much time I've wasted on that thankless, ridiculous task, but, you know, 100% more than I should have wasted. Right. So Sal has a similar experience. We're passionate about this product because it makes it so easy, and not only will it save your business a lot of money, but employees love it. So rarely do you get a product that helps you cut costs and your employees aren't getting screwed over by it, right?
Awesome.
I mean, I think we really do come full circle here when we were talking about stacking your most critical teams and you know, putting your best people in the best spots. Do you think of anything more ridiculous than having a SEAL officer having to waste like tens and tens of hours filling out expense claims and travel claims, and then having to get his guys to fill them out and having to capture receipts and all this stuff? I mean, it's an antiquated system. You know, that's just one of the dozens of problems that companies face that we solve.
Sounds like an amazing product you guys have. And Matt, I'm glad you brought up, I was hoping you would bring that example up. Thank you. But you're right. And Sal, like you said, bring a full circle. Like, that's insane to have someone with such a high skill set taking time away from executing that skill set to do a receipt or paperwork associated with the
product.
So, yeah.
Right. Especially when you're talking guys like field ops, right? You get guys out in the field. Those guys should be out making money. Those are the revenue generators for a company, right?
Sure.
They should be out generating revenue, not really having to stress and worry and spend time. Oh, what did I buy? Oh, did I forget to get a receipt? Oh my God, they're going to kill me. Like, we handle all that. You don't have to think about it. Again, we talked about it, kind of common theme throughout this podcast, de-stressing.
Yep.
Get rid of the things that cause you stress. Get rid of the bloat. Get rid of the nonsense. And Bluebeam helps do that.
Yeah, really good example or really good point that Sal makes here. Everyone's, you know, these service providers, everyone's hurting for workers right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want your workers, your best performers, you want to unlock their productivity, right? You need them doing their job instead of filling out travel claims. So you can either, you know, have a streamlined system and save 20% of the time across, you know, five of your employees, and that's like a whole nother employee, or you can go out and you can hire, you know, another employee, right? So it's a force multiplier. It unlocks your teams to really focus on generating revenue and focus on their work.
And again, this is only, I mean, we're just talking really kind of receipt capture, expense claims, travel claims right now. We do account automation, controls, we eliminate the approval process. There is so much more that Bluebeam does that, you know, I'm sure people listening to your podcast will be very interested in learning more about it. And I'm sure we'll give contact information at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we could probably talk for another 30 minutes on it.
Awesome things are easy to talk about. Bluebeam's awesome. You're right. I could talk about it for 30 minutes.
Oh, mic drop. All right. So awesome stuff on Bluebeam. We definitely can't end the show without, let me show everyone my shirt, right? So swim
with nice.
The mission, right? Right? Swim with a mission. Swam. What an amazing, unbelievable organization. It's how I ended up meeting you guys, you know, as members of SWAM. And I want to give you, Sal, an opportunity to, you know, just tell us what SWAM's all about. Why does it exist? And anything else you could share?
Yeah, so SWAM is an incredible organization. I'm lucky enough to be on the board of directors. Matt here is on the advisory board. It's the JD. He's working his way up. One day hopes to be on the board of directors.
My time is worth a lot more. So, you know,
what I enjoy the most is you, both of your high level of humility. You're very humble individuals. This is good. please.
Well, Sal's got a lot of spare time and, you know,
well, Matt uses it to hide his insecurities, so I just let him go with it. Hey, man, this is about SWAM. Yeah, SWAM of the Mission is an incredible organization. All kidding aside, it is truly an amazing, amazing organization. Not since really the SEAL teams have I found a group of people that are so mission focused, that are so motivated, that are all rowing in the same direction. It's truly inspiring. Our mission is to end veteran suicide. And so you can think of us sort of as the fundraising arm for a lot of nonprofit and resource organizations and non-government organizations that are providing services that align with our mission, right? Whether that's equine therapy, they're training dogs to be therapy dogs. There's job training, there's housing, substance abuse counseling, right? And any number of these amazing organizations that are providing these therapies and resources to veterans. But a lot of times, you know, these organizations that are so good at providing those services, they don't know the first thing about fundraising, right? Or they don't have the network, or they don't have the capacity, they don't have the manpower, they don't have the time to go out and learn how to fundraise or to just fundraise themselves. So what some of the mission does is we kind of take that on our shoulders. We throw, you know, some of the most incredible events you've ever been to. Jay, I know you've been to some of them, right? We have Absolutely. Paintball with a Mission, which I am beyond proud to say we hold the world record for the largest paintball fundraiser on the planet, which is incredible. We do Fish with a Mission, which next year it'll be the largest tuna fishing tournament in New England. We do Run with a Mission. We're doing the Manchester Marathon. We're the beneficiary of the Manchester Marathon this year. We do Canine with a Mission. We do a number of different events. We do our incredible, which is my personal favorite event, our Gold Star Dinner. Our Gold Star Dinner had over 650 attendees this year, where we recognized and honored the families of Gold Star families of fallen Navy SEALs. It's one of the most incredible events you will ever attend. It is absolutely amazing.
That was one of the most, sorry to break your stride, but one of the most moving events I've been to. It was unbelievable. Yeah. The dinner was incredible. So
it's something I look forward to every year. I know that there are at least 650 people that are looking forward to it, to attending again this year. So, you know, what we do there is we honor the families of the fallen Navy SEALs. And we help raise money for the services that are helping us to eliminate veteran suicide. And so, you know, I'll do a call to action for anybody listening. SWAM with a Mission could use your support. We could use volunteers. If you have the capacity, you're in a position to donate, please do. You can visit our website at www.swam, that's SWAM, Sierra Whiskey Alpha Mike.org. And you can donate there. It's, like I said, it's an amazing organization. We have two full-time employees. That's it. We raised $3 million this year. 96 cents of every dollar is going to these organizations that are helping to prevent veteran suicide.
Sal, say that one more time, because that's such how much of every dollar?
Yeah. So 96 cents of every dollar is going to the organizations. And you can rest assured that the organizations that we're helping to fund are vetted. They're spending the money appropriately and they're providing incredible services to veterans. In order to receive money from SWAM with a Mission, there is a strenuous vetting process. So we make sure that the money that we're fundraising is well spent. You know, we want the biggest bang for the buck when it comes to helping our veterans.
Awesome. It's an unbelievable organization. I'm pretty new to it myself, Jim Kalutis, people here at Kalutis who are fortunate enough to attend. I have to say the events are run so very well. Like that, the paintball event like went off without a hitch. I mean, the dinner was beautiful. Just everything flows too. So great cause, great organization. And, you know, you guys really pull it together well, really, really well.
Yeah. And I will just kind of end on this. Thank you. Yeah, a lot of hard work goes into that. And I shout out to all my fellow board members, advisory board members. As much as Matt and I joke, Matt was an integral part in helping set up that awesome demonstration we had at the dinner. It wouldn't have been possible without Matt's help. So I got to give him that shout out. But I will also say that, you know, SWAM does have a focus on helping the SEAL community in particular, because we found that the SEAL community, because of the extraordinary amount of combat that special operations sees, that they are more adversely affected by, you know, post-traumatic stress and a number of other mental health conditions. So we do try to focus on supporting organizations that helping out the SEAL community. It's about 45% of the money we raise goes to helping to organizations kind of focus on helping the SEAL community, and then 55% local here in New Hampshire and Massachusetts.
Sal, thank you so much. Great stuff you're doing. Great stuff you're both doing. And thanks to SWAM. Excellent cause. How do people get in touch with you? Because, man, you guys, we could probably go on for hours. It's great. Like, there's so much we can talk about. But just based on all of the skills and the everything we talked about the front side of the show, and then Bluebean and now SWAM, how do you want people to get in touch with you? Because I'm sure there's going to be questions.
We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to tell you more about SWAM. Set up a meeting, Zoom, whatever is easy for you. You can reach me at Sal, S-A-L, Sierra Alpha Lima, at Bluebean, the color blue, bean like a bean sprout, bluebean.ai. Anything regarding SWAM, you can get in touch with me at Sal, Sierra Alpha Lima, at SWAM, Sierra Whiskey Alpha Mites.org. So Sal at bluebean.ai. Sal at swam.org.
Awesome. Thanks, Sal. Matt, how about you?
So if you reach out, if you'd like to reach out, my email address is matt at bluebean.ai. So same domain as Sal, just M-A-T-T.
Outstanding, guys. Thank you so much for investing your time, sharing so much of your experience, your time with us. It was great to talk to you today.
Likewise, Jay. Thank you.
Likewise. Thanks, Jay.
Huge thank you again to Matt and Sal for joining us in the second segment of Facility Rockstars. Can't thank you enough, guys. And for everyone listening, whatever you may have picked up from the leadership aspect to the business discussions we had, or just the SEAL journey along the way that these two guys shared, tell someone else about the show, inquire. We left you the contact information. And it's been another great episode of Facility Rockstars. We will see everyone next time.
It's a wrap. Another episode of Facility Rockstars is in the books. Facility Rockstars is sponsored by Kalutis, operating the way you operate in order to make your life easier. Until next time, facilitate and rock on.